Encre bleue, l'Océanie entre les lignes, le podcast des littératures du Pacifique. Écoutez Encre bleue, c'est s'amarrer dans le Pacifique pour une minute, pour une heure avec un texte, un auteur. L'Association des éditeurs de Tahiti et des îles organise depuis plus de 20 ans le Salon du livre de Tahiti, lire en Polynésie. Public, lecteurs, auteurs, éditeurs, petits et grands se retrouvent au pied du Tumuora, le banyan de la Maison de la Culture de Papeete, pendant 4 jours pour fêter la littérature d'ici et d'ailleurs. Le podcast Encre bleue vous propose de revivre ces moments d'échange avec les nombreux auteurs présents à cette occasion dans les épisodes hors série « Rencontres au pied du banyan ».
Présentation de 39 bonnes raisons de transformer des obsèques hawaïennes en beuveries avec Christiana Kahakowila et Mireille Vignol, ouvrage paru chez les éditions Au Vent des Îles.
Welcome, Christiana. Christiana, can you introduce yourself?
Oui, je m'appelle Christiana Kahakowila. I'm Christiana Kahakowila et j'habite en Hawaii. I live in Hawaii.
Now, are we going to speak English or French?
Both.
Okay, so we'll just do our own pidgin. We'll just switch from one to the other when we feel like it. Okay, so maybe we have to start to say that this book and this one are the same book. They don't look quite the same, but they are the same book, French version, original version. So, why is your book called This is Paradise?
Yes, in the United States, aux États-Unis, le paradis c'est toujours Hawaii. Tous les Américains pensent le paradis et des vacances, ils pensent à Hawaii. Donc, le titre This is Paradise, il a un effet aux Américains. It has an effect on Americans, but I think that's very different here.
Well, this morning we had a class, right? And every time we ask a class of students, you know, what is paradise? What do they say?
Tahiti.
First they say heaven, you know, like
oh,
right
yeah,
up there.
Heaven.
Like this is literal, man. This is paradise right there. And then they say, oh, well, Tahiti. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just to explain that we took, there are 6 short stories, and we actually took the title of another short story for the French edition because we felt that it was a catchier title because paradise for the French is Tahiti and not Hawaii, and we wanted people to be aware that it was in Hawaii. So in French, it becomes... 39 bonnes raisons de transformer des obsèques hawaïennes en beuveries, and in English,
39 rules to make a Hawaiian funeral into a drinking game.
Okay. Donc, ce titre, en fait, il nous a bien servi en français parce que les gens sont intrigués, que tout de suite, on sait que ça se passe à Hawaï et que donc, c'est un titre qui a, je trouve, bien marché. Mais bon, on n'a pas parlé de la couverture aussi quand même jusqu'à maintenant, et c'est une couverture qui est tellement belle que ça vaut le coup de le remarquer. Donc Gabrielle Ambrim, qui est la graphiste, nous a fait une superbe couverture avec des petits rappels du motif de la couverture. C'est vraiment superbe, et toute la collection maintenant... à des couvertures de ce genre qui se ressemblent, mais qui se... Enfin, voilà. Regardez vous-même. C'est vraiment très, très chouette. Christiana, je ne suis pas à la bonne page.
Okay.
ce que j'aimerais te demander, c'est peut-être de lire... Tu m'as dit avant que la nouvelle 39 bonnes raisons est la plus personnelle pour toi. Donc, toi, tu as grandi en Californie, donc ton héritage est à Hawaï, mais tu as toujours tu es toujours retourné à Hawaï. Donc, dans cette nouvelle, tu fais une liste, en fait, de, donc, ces bonnes raisons de transformer des obsèques hawaïennes en beuveries. Mais en fait, donc ça, c'est quand tu vas aux funérailles de ta grand-mère à partir de la Californie et que tu constates tout ça. Donc on va lire en français et en anglais. Donc, start in English, maybe?
Yeah.
Donc, juste un petit extrait pour vous donner une idée de...
39 rules for making a Hawaiian funeral into a drinking game. 1. Take a drink each time the hale pastor says hell. Take a drink. 2. Take a drink each time he asks if anybody in the room wants to go there. 3. Take a drink each time he looks at one of your uncles when he says this. 4. Take a drink because cane was burning next to Kaumualii Highway on the drive from Kekaha to Poipu, and the hot scent reminded you of your grandmother's house with its upright piano, rattan furniture, and that deep cement sink in the washroom where laundry was scrubbed, and sometimes babies too. In the family room, you and your older cousins used to jostle each other, each of you hoping to be the one who got to sit on Grandma's lap in her high-backed butterfly chair. 1 year ago, you moved to Honolulu from Los Angeles just to be closer to her, and now she's gone.
39 bonnes raisons de transformer des obsèques hawaïennes en beuveries. 1. Bois un coup chaque fois que le pasteur haole prononce le mot « enfer ». 2. Bois un coup chaque fois qu'il demande si quelqu'un dans la salle veut y aller. 3. Bois un coup chaque fois qu'il regarde un de tes oncles en le disant. 4. Bois un coup car on brûlait la canne à sucre près du Kaumuali Highway de Kekaha à Poipu et l'odeur de chaud t'a rappelé la maison de ta grand-mère avec son piano droit, ses meubles en rotin et le profond évier en ciment de la buanderie où on lessivait le linge et aussi, à l'occasion, quelques bébés. Dans le séjour, tu chahutais avec tes cousines plus grandes, chacune convoitant de s'asseoir sur les genoux de mamie dans son haut fauteuil papillon. Il y a un an, tu es revenu de Los Angeles à Honolulu juste pour te rapprocher d'elle, et maintenant, elle n'est plus. So tell us about that. Tell us about this experience, which was the closest to you.
Yes, this is probably the story that has maybe the most nonfiction in it. I had moved back to Hawaii after graduate school, and I wanted to be there on my own terms and as an adult. And I knew my grandmother was ill, and I wouldn't have much more time with her. And she passed away a year after I had moved there. And the funeral was such a time, as funerals can be here as well, for celebration. It was a huge family reunion. But because I had grown up in California, far from Maui, even though we visited, it was a time that I felt like I didn't know what my place would be within the family. And did I really belong here, especially now that she was gone? But my family, I don't think, felt that way. And so the story is very much this kind of feeling of this young person trying to understand if they have a home here or not. In real life, when the funeral was over, I got back to Honolulu where I was living, and I wrote an email to a friend who I knew would kind of understand this feeling. And I wrote it as a list, and I numbered the list, and I got to the end, and I hit send. And I thought, oh my gosh, I think I just wrote a story. And I think it's going to be the first book or the first story in a whole collection. So that was kind of the very beginning of this whole book.
In the first novel, in the first short story, This is Paradise, you have three groups of women who are discussing the same event. And one thing that was very interesting for me as the translator was that you were always saying we. It's interesting because we've been talking about the nous, the we, us, a lot in this salon. And it's actually the writing here that is we. And the corrector, when she read it, she said, it's a bit strange. You know, it's always, we're doing this, we're doing that. And I went, yeah, it's actually on purpose. That's the way it is. So I'll just read you a little excerpt from this, in French, actually. and it's about cleaning ladies who are in a hotel from Micronesia. En attendant le bus, nous plaisantons ensemble. Nous bavardons de nos maris et de nos enfants. Les petits, on ne les voit pas grandir. Ils changent d'école, changent d'amis, changent de vêtements à toute vitesse. Les plus jeunes parlent déjà anglais mieux que nous et les aînés envisagent d'aller à l'université. Nous sommes fiers d'eux, fiers d'elles, inquiètes aussi. Nous voulons les voir partir. Nous voulons les garder à la maison pour nous faire aider. Nous souhaitons même, dans un recoin de notre cœur, les renvoyer en Micronésie, à Pohnpei, Yap ou Kosra, pour qu'ils apprennent à être véritablement des nôtres. Ils sont déjà américains. So tell us about this we, this togetherness, this way to write that is collective.
I used to live in Waikiki. I don't live there anymore, but Waikiki is a really, of course, a central place for tourism and for visitors. And so often, Hawaii is told from the perspective of people who are not from there, who are just visiting. And I wanted to reverse that and think of who gets to do the looking and who gets to do the watching, whose gaze it is that's front and center. But it didn't feel quite right to have it just be one person or one woman in that story. It really had to be a group of women, and in fact, maybe more than one group of women. And so it's these young surfer girls, and they're kind of, you know, they're tough, and they don't really want anyone to join them, and they're a real clique. It's these older career women who have left the island for education and then come back. And then it's this group of Micronesian workers in the hotel who also kind of have this position in Waikiki and in Hawaii. And as the story progresses and we go through these different groups of we and how they understand themselves as being part of a group, I hope it also starts to transcend this idea of groups and we start to think about what it means to be a woman.
Tell us a little bit more about those Micronesian women and what is their place in Hawaiian society and why are they there?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a difficult history because the U.S. dropped atomic bombs in Micronesia and practiced dropping their nuclear bombs there. And so, of course, there were health issues that arose. And so there's certain agreements now with the Marshalls and with Guam and with other areas that folks from there can come to the States to receive medical care and receive other kinds of care. But then there's a lot of resentment that people from there are coming in and using resources. And so there's a lot of tension. Plus, they don't often, you know, often can't get white collar jobs, so they'll work in the hotels. So even if I don't go deep into that history in the story, it's kind of there at the edges. And for me, that matters a lot. There's often history right there at the edges, kind of scratching. And maybe you know some of it, and maybe you don't, and maybe it pushes you to go and look more of it up.
And these those cleaning women, you know, they say at one stage, you know, we know how to answer the phone. We say, aloha. And you talk in different parts of the book, there is different mentions of this aloha concept. And in fact, you know, there's the sort of cheapened way. There's the way that someone doesn't understand it or feels that, you know, because they are not accepted, well, there's no aloha. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, aloha, like aroha and other similar words in the Pacific. It means love, it means hello, it has several different meanings. But in Hawaii and in Waikiki, it's also a marketing tool. The first thing you see when you step off the plane in the airport is aloha and e komo mai, which means welcome. So I think there's a way it gets sold, right? But what aloha also is literally sharing breath, sharing ha, being so close to someone, you get to smell them, and that's a different kind of intimacy. That's a different way of knowing a person, and it's a different way of knowing a place. So, yes, I'm writing about a lot of different kinds of aloha and ways of it being used, but also very sincere and intimate ways of understanding the word.
Another topic that comes up in one of your short stories called One Lay is cockfighting. And, of course, from what we read, it's quite common in Hawaii. And from what I understand, it's quite common in Tahiti as well. But the culture, this culture of cockfighting, can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, cockfighting is definitely illegal in Hawaii. It is not legal. I should make that very clear. But there is an underground world in which cockfighting happens, and especially if you're driving in the rural areas, you might see these little wooden tents, and when you see them, they're little triangles. You know that's where the fighting birds live, so someone's breeding them and training them. And I was very curious about this world. I also wanted to know about women who enter this world, which is very rare. So I wrote a story about it.
So I'll just read a little excerpt from that. Mon père avait coutume de dire qu'il avait les combats de coq dans le sang. Le chinois en lui aimait les paris, le hawaïen aimait les combats, et le philippin aimait les oiseaux. Avant de mourir, Pa avait élevé des coqs parmi les mieux entraînés et les plus agressifs de nos îles. Comme il ne perdait jamais, il lui rapportait beaucoup d'argent. Mon père traitait ces oiseaux comme des enfants. Il les faisait manger à l'intérieur de la maison et les invitait à monter dans son pick-up. Il leur accordait plus de confiance qu'à ma grand-mère ou à mon oncle. Son noir favori, Ono, dormait au pied de son lit. Comme un chien, il me garde. Préviens si quelqu'un veut me tuer. Il me racontait aussi qu'entre ses coqs et ma mère, il avait choisi les coqs. Et il m'assurait qu'un jour, je devrais faire le même choix et que je suivrais son exemple avec les mêmes conséquences. Pour mon 16e anniversaire, il m'avait offert mon premier coq à élever et entraîner moi-même. C'était un hatch, et je l'avais appelé Makana, ce qui veut dire cadeau en hawaïen. Mon père me montrait comment tenir ses pattes et son bec pour qu'il n'attaque pas, et comment fredonner pour le calmer. « Pa, tu crois que je serai aussi bonne comme toi ?» Je lui avais demandé ça un jour dans la cour. À l'époque, je parlais pidgin sans y réfléchir, sans me soucier des personnes à qui je m'adressais, y compris les professeurs à l'école. J'avais la même approche que mon père avec les mots. Autrement dit, je ne leur accordais aucune valeur. So this is a story about a girl who is a cockfighter and who speaks pidgin. And pidgin is like a character in your book. Why is that?
So there's Olelo Hawaii. There's the Hawaiian language, which was spoken before European contact. And then after European contact, the missionary descendants create cane plantations in Hawaii. And these plantations are carceral, or essentially prison landscapes. And they start to import workers. Japan, China, Portugal, the Philippines. And these workers have to find a way to communicate. And so they create a Creole language. And that's what we call pidgin. And it's still what local folks speak to one another. It's certainly what's spoken far more often than Olelo Hawaii. And so, yeah, it had to be a character in my book because it's what I grew up hearing and it's what my family speaks. And it's one of the languages that I associate with Hawaii.
So we'll have a discussion tomorrow about the translation of this pidgin into French, because, of course, it was a bit tricky, wasn't it? Maybe I can just say a quick word about it now, but basically the last thing I wanted to do was to sort of translate it into standard French or a French that is very smooth and nice, but, you know, doesn't convey the beauty of the pidgin because it's a very colorful language. And so what happens is that I could have used a Creole, but there's no Creole in the Pacific except one in New Caledonia, very limited, and also very far in a linguistic way from Hawaii. So basically, you know, the idea was to create a language that would sound different to the standard French, that would keep the Hawaiian-ness of it, but that at the same time would be comprehensible in French, of course, but different. And so I thought, well, maybe there is the Tahiti French. So that would be a good idea. That would sound good, except I don't live in Tahiti. I don't have the ear for it. And so I asked Chantal Spitz, if she could work with me on those passages in Pidgin. So I won't go into much details because tomorrow at 5 p.m., we will be talking about that, Chantal, Christiana and I. But anyway, it's been a fascinating work of trying to find that voice that just sounded a little bit like Tahiti, not Tahitian, of course, but just the French spoken in Tahiti. It sounded a little bit like there was some Hawaiian in it. And in the end, well, it sounds like something different. But it's been the really weirder thing is that I've just finished translating another book from Hawaii, and it's a detective story, and it has some pidgin in it, but it's like it's not a character in that book, and I just felt I can't translate it the same way. It doesn't work somehow. So I'm challenging myself in the way that I will approach pidgin this time. And so, I mean, that's just a quick parenthesis about translation, that every case is different and every case needs to be approached differently. In terms of the short story called The Road to Hannah, there is one of the things the kids told you is that there's a lot of animals in your story. But in this story, there's the dog. Do you think there's many animals in your stories?
I don't think I noticed until the kids pointed it out, and then I realized there probably were.
In this case, in this story, we have a Hawaiian girl who has grown up in Las Vegas, and she returns to Hawaii, and she's with her boyfriend who grew up in Hawaii, but who is from Minnesota, I think. And it's all. The thing is, you know, who belongs where? And how do we belong somewhere? Does it mean that you're born there? Does it mean that you are from there? I mean, it's the whole issue that's discussed there. So why is this issue close to you?
Yeah, I think I think about belonging a lot. But I also think about what it means to be Kanaka Maoli, to be Native Hawaiian, Hawaiian Desouche. And that is different than having lived in a place or even been born in a place or even had parents or grandparents born in that place. And so I wanted to negotiate that in my story. But maybe I'll go back one moment because there's this moment you read from Wan Lei, which is a different story. And it's about the cockfighting, and it's this sentence. My dad used to say cockfighting was in his blood. The Chinese in him liked betting. The Hawaiian liked fighting, and the Filipino liked birds. It's this moment of obviously like stereotyping and kind of broad sweeps. It's a moment that's supposed to be funny that maybe one of my uncles would have said and we would have had a good laugh about. But it's also a moment that sets up a certain kind of expectation. And I like when my stories start with an expectation. We expect there to be things in a certain way. We expect that two people, two lovers on a road trip, will continue to fall in love. And then as we get farther on the road trip, as in the road to Hana, that expectation starts to shift. We're not always just one kind of person or one kind of group of women that might get transcended. We might not understand belonging in the same way, and that maybe sometimes it's okay. Sometimes we rise above it. Sometimes we're a woman with other women beyond any other kind of identity. And sometimes we're from a place, and that makes a huge difference. And so Road to Hana is a story that I think is almost a counter-argument to the first story in the collection, and is doing something different. And because it comes later, the reader has an expectation. And then I want to pull the rug out from under them a little and shake them up a touch.
And it's interesting because the character says, the character who is Hawaiian but grew up in Las Vegas, you know, he says, you know, what does it mean to you? You know, I mean, I was born here. Where am I from? Where am I from if I'm not from here? And she says, you know, in his songs, my cousin can retrace 25 generations, can go back 25 generations. That's what it means to belong to a country. And is that what you feel? Is that...
Yeah, I don't think it's even about the number of 25, though yeah. It is a very long time. I think it's about the fact that if you're Hawaiian, you really believe that we came from the earth. We came from the Aina. That is who our ancestors are. And once you have that belief, your relationship with Hawaii is completely different. If you really came from the Aina, that is your ancestor as much as your grandmother, who you loved and knew as your ancestor, then you have to love and know that island in a completely different way. And so I think that's getting closer to my understanding of what it means to be from a place or native to a place.
I think, finally, I'd like to ask you about, it's your first time in Tahiti. Mm-hmm. So this, to me, I mean, this is so Polynesian. You know, your stories, there is that really Polynesian spirit going through it. So how do you feel here? Does it feel, I mean, how close to home does it feel to be here?
It feels very similar. There's moments of language that I recognize because it's so close to Hawaiian. There's ways of greeting. When we arrived at the airport, of course, there was lei for us, and that felt like coming home. But I think we're also visitors here. We're staying at a hotel. I mean, these are moments of being reminded that even while there's connection, there's things we have to negotiate coming here. It was very moving to me last night when we were honored and invited in, because it was a reminder that this time coming, this first time for me, I'm a guest. And I want to keep being a guest and not be a tourist. And I think that's a very special feeling that I hope to have elsewhere in the Pacific.
Vous avez quelque chose à dire pour clôturer ça?
Read the book.
C'est un bon conseil.
Et aussi, your next work, that's the usual
Bien sûr.
Word of the end.
Yes, I'm working on a historical novel set on the island of Maui. Yes, and I'm working on a novel for youth, for like middle grades, for the college age, it's set also in Hawaii, and the premise is there is a girl who wakes up, and for reasons you get to learn in the book, realizes she can hear boys' voices.
Ooh. Merci. En tout cas, applaudissez bien fort, s'il vous plaît, Mireille et Christiana.
C'était la présentation de 39 bonnes raisons de transformer des obsèques hawaïennes en beuveries avec Christiana Kahakouila et Mireille Vignol, ouvrage paru chez les éditions Au Vent des Îles.
Merci d'avoir écouté cet épisode. N'hésitez pas à naviguer sur Encre Bleue pour découvrir d'autres murmures de livres et les nombreuses discussions d'auteurs et autrices du Pacifique. Retrouvez-nous sur toutes les plateformes d'écoute et sur le site lireenpolynésie.pf. Maruru et Yaorana.